Okay, well, let's see what's the problem, man. You want to go okay?
There's two of them, and they say that thing is fine. Hold on, but I'm sorry, like, say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please.
Smart
Weezer, are you ready for this?
And the cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular hit. UFO over New York,
and I am too surprised.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that the days like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes, these are strange days indeed, and this program reflects the UFO side of the strangeness. Welcome to program number 370. Tonight, Dave Furlot with his take on it, controlled remote viewer Lynn Buchanan, and Alfred Lemberg will take us home. And joining us on the phone very shortly, Victor Vigiani, who's sensibly stayed in this evening. My guess is that you may not recognize the name Bob Pratt. However, Bob Pratt was a much respected man internationally in the UFO-related field who passed away last Saturday in Palm Beach, Florida. UFO researcher and journalist Bob Pratt was for several years the editor of the MUFON UFO Journal. He was co-author with J. Allen Hynek of Night Siege, the Hudson Valley UFO sightings, and he was the author of UFO Danger in Brazil. And Brazilian UFO researchers had so much respect for Bob, who visited that country no less than 19 times, that 75 of those Brazilian UFO researchers got together and presented Bob Pratt with a special award, a plaque as a bene merit or honorary Brazilian UFO researcher for his countless contributions to the Brazilian UFO community. And many UFO researchers around the world have in the last couple of days posted tributes to Bob Pratt on the UFO updates list at virtuallystrange.net. And while his website is still online, those of you with web access should go and take a look at Bob Pratt's website. There's a phenomenal amount of stuff there. And Bob was a real middle-of-the-road guy. He didn't just believe any old guff. And if he didn't believe it, he said so. But his website has some pretty remarkable reports there. And there's a link to it in tonight's program listing. And we're going to miss you, Bob Pratt. And I wanted at one time, actually just a couple of months ago, to have him on the program. And he wasn't well enough to do that, apparently. So that's another one gone. The old-timers are fading somewhat quickly. And how frustrating it must be if you're like Bob Pratt and you've never had a UFO sighting and to go without knowing the answer one way or t'other. Okay, as advertised, let's head out west of the city. Victor Vigiani joins us on the line. Evening, Victor.
Good evening, Errol.
How goes it?
It goes well. It goes very well.
The paint job finished?
Yeah, we've just gotten down to the fine strokes now, you know,
good.
The last little short strokes, and we're gradually narrowing in on living a life normally again.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope it gets done rather quickly.
Big press release this week from your side of the ufological field, huh?
Yeah, it generated a lot of interest, Errol, and just over the last 3 days, actually 2 days, I've had calls as far away as California. I had a couple of calls from California yesterday, two from New York, several from here within Toronto, and Global TV seems to be interested in things. And I know I spoke with Paul Hellyer yesterday, and he has he was called by Fox TV, and apparently he did an interview with them. Whether it's by telephone or not, we're not quite sure. But he and I were talking yesterday to kind of put our heads together to find out exactly what kinds of things they could potentially ask him. And Global TV wants to do something with both of us, too. So,
Paul Hellyer, who this week it was announced, had asked the Parliament of Canada for hearings into UFOs.
That's right. Well, basically what the press release did was reconfirm Errol, what was said at the Exo Political Conference back in September, and Paul's statement that the UFOs are as real as the planes that fly overhead, and the whole political implications and the policy implications of what the extraterrestrial issue really means to everyone, and also too the fact that the government needs to look very closely at what this issue really is all about. So we formulated a press release that encapsulated all of those issues, and the media is definitely responding to it. But then again, the media is doing what it always does. It reacts initially. It jumps up. It looks over the fence, and if it sees something interesting, it looks at it very quickly and then jumps back behind the fence, and it formulates its notes and does its little interviews, and then it just passes it by again. So we're really not too not overly impressed by the interest. We can't say that the interest is as intense as we want it, although the interest is good, it's positive. What we need to do is the media begin to call for the same things that we're calling for. We are calling for an investigation. We are calling for Senate hearings. When will it happen that the media will take this as seriously as we do and begin themselves to make these same claims, calling for an investigation into the whole issue? That's the kind of door that we're knocking on. So, you know, it's really nice to have an interview with someone on Global TV or CTV or whatever it happens to be. But if they don't take it seriously and extend the whole dialogue, it really doesn't mean a whole heck of a whole lot. So in that sense, I continue to be disappointed in the knee-jerk reactions of the media, but we are all fully well aware that in order for this to really come to fruition, the media needs to make some really strong statements about it in public, not just the exopolitics movement here in Canada.
Well, let's see how that shakes out in the next couple of weeks. Of course, there's the upcoming election and the vote of non-confidence in the present government going to happen next week. So that's going to push you back into the shade again for a little while. We need to go, Victor.
Got
a break here.
Go ahead. That's just great. You're having Mr. Farlot on.
Yes. And
I just want to encourage everyone, if they can, to visit our site and see if they can contact the Senate committee. There is a way to contact the Senate committee to send your interest to them. Just go to Exopolitics Toronto and then put in your word that you want these hearings to happen too.
Okay, exopoliticstoronto.com, yes?
That's right.
Okay, Victor, we'll see you here next week, presumably.
Let's do that.
Okay,
thanks a lot, Errol.
Happy touching up, or fine stroking, or whatever it is that you're doing with a paintbrush.
We will do it.
And paint.
Good night, now.
Good night, Victor.
Here with his take on it is Dave Furlong.
There's a thread in the UFO updates list that has garnered much attention and has made me wonder about the medical practice of psychology and psychiatry. The thread is called Alien Faces Are None Other Than Mother. A prominent psychologist by the name of Frederick Malmstrom has conducted a little research into abductions and concluded that the classic gray alien seen by experiencers, a.k.a. abductees of alien beings, is nothing more than the remembered face of their mother when they were too young to actually make sense of what their eyes saw. In other words, they were less than a month old and could only see vague shapes.
the learned doctor goes out on a limb a little further and suggests that perhaps the sightings of flying saucers is a remembrance or longing to return to something equally round, the female breast. His ammunition for this theory is that some of the experiencers talk about being abducted from the bed in which they were sleeping, and it also works well with the other theory of sleep paralysis accounting for such theories. Like the sleep paralysis theory, they both fall flat on their face, pun intended, when the reported case of abduction deals with a person who was not sleeping during their experience. Now, at a glance, it would appear that war has been declared on people that claim to have been abducted by aliens, because everyone seems to be stumbling over each other to try and normalize the experience, explain it all away very neatly. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't have a problem with someone coming up with a realistic alternative to explain the forced abduction of human beings by creatures from another world. But for God's sake, let it be something that a normal thinking human being can realize as being somewhat plausible. Okay, let me put it to you this way. I'm a pretty big guy, and I'm pretty sure that in a fair fight, I would be able to get the better of my friend John Velez. But there is no way in hell that I would ever dream of telling John Velez that the faces of the people he saw while being abducted was his mind imagining his mother as he saw her during the first month of his life. He'd kill me. And what I'd love to know is, does Dr. Malmstrom presume to say that he remembers the images of his mother looking like an alien in the first month of his life? Or did he perhaps interview some month-old or younger babies? Now, I could be wrong, but with Dr. Malmstrom associating aliens and UFOs with our mothers, that perhaps he studied Sigmund Freud a little too closely. But come on, even Freud once said that sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. I can almost see Freud looking at all of Malmstrom's data and then talking with someone that was abducted by alien beings. Oh, yes. What you saw there was nothing more than your mother's breast. You did not see a spaceship flying through the air, and the fact that it was recorded on radar by a nearby military base just means that you think your mother had large breasts. You were probably denied being fed from your mother's breast, and that need surfaced by you seeing flying breasts in the air. Being taken aboard the ship, you were laid out on a nice shiny table, and the faces you saw were the kind, sweet face of your mother just before she denied you access to her breast. Oh, pay no attention to any of those evil machines that the supposed alien creatures used on your body. That was just your way of dealing with the pain of not being breastfed. Okay, enough's enough. Firstly, if somebody admits the fact that UFOs are consistently visiting our planet and that those UFOs are manned or intelligently piloted vehicles, then it's about time that we admitted the possibility that people could be abducted or taken away for scientific testing and potentially tagged, much the same way we tag animals in the field today. It's not a joke. It's not a game. And it damn well is not something for scientists to come up with stupid and illogical theories to try and explain the experience away. Do some real research. Do not automatically rule out that the simplest explanation could be valid. It really could have happened just the way those people said it did. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Vermont, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
And Dean is full of admiration for your Sigmund accent, Dave.
What can I say?
Yeah, it was very nice. I like it a lot. Yes, and a good take, too. There is something afoot. You know, you got your Susan Clancy's and you got this guy, and then you got a whole bunch of other people. It's like beat up on abductee month or something.
Oh, I know. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. And the silly thing is, like, these guys have come out plain and simple and said, oh, no, I don't believe in UFOs. I don't believe in aliens. Therefore.
Yes.
You know, it's like, hold it. You've just ruled out a whole pile of stuff.
But
take a step back.
These are learned people.
Oh, yeah, I know.
With letters after their names.
I know. You know, it's like, okay.
ASS.
Yeah, ASS is right.
Yes.
What do you guys think? That, you know, all of these thousands and thousands of sightings and the pictures and the video and the film, you think that's all just like, oh, made up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
It's been a very strange week or two for the poor abductees, and I imagine it hasn't finished yet. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Sure.
Okay. Have a good week. Ah, dear, oh, dear. A lot of discussion, and I've had a lot of email about remote viewing. In the past, over the last few years, one or two people surrounding the field on the very periphery have maybe given remote viewing a bit of a bad name as far as ufology is concerned. But, as I'm sure those of you that listen to this program on a regular basis know, I feel that everything that we call paranormal is interconnected, and there are connecting points all over the place. And whether they be psychics or seers into the future, or whether they be the medium on television, or whether they be like our guest for the next hour, these are very talented people. They have talent that has evolved, that has been trained to be able to do things that we consider, or most people consider, to be very strange and unbelievable. I first spoke with Lynn Buchanan a couple of years ago on Mind Shift. And I think Lynn was on program number 11, and we spent a fair amount of time getting into background, and the hour really blew by quickly. And at the end of the program, the very end, I thought, oh, I'll just check the email on the screen here, and there were a couple of interesting questions. And I posed those questions as the theme music was rolling, and Lynn Buchanan said, yes, the answer to both of those questions is yes. And I had to say, well, our time is up, Lynn. I got to get out of here. Good night. And it was one of those cliffhangers that I was determined to go back to. And this seems to be a pretty good opportunity to do that. Lynn Buchanan, welcome back to the radio here in Toronto and in Montreal.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I thought, well, I won't print out Lynn's bio because it's on his website. And a few minutes ago, I tried to get to your website, and it didn't want to play with me.
Oh, it's playing bad again. We've had all kinds of trouble over the last month with the ISP, and it's just been one trouble after another, and it's sad to hear that it's down again.
Yeah, one of those live radio moments, you know.
That's right.
Let's talk a little bit before we get to the questions that I posed a couple of years ago to you. Let's get into a bit of perhaps your background and how you got into remote viewing, because you were involved with Project Stargate.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
The United States Army CIA espionage unit.
That's right.
And you specialized there in controlled remote viewing.
Yes. In fact, I was the wound up being the trainer for the unit after I'd been there for a year or so.
Mm-hmm. But how did you, let's go back. How did you get involved with this espionage unit?
Well, that's sort of a long story. An incident happened in Augsburg, Germany, where I was stationed at the time as a Russian linguist, and parts of that are still classified, so I won't go into the details of it. But it attracted the attention of General Albert Stubblebine, who at the time was head of the Army's intelligence program, and they pulled me back to Washington, D.C. to do PK work, which is, you know, the mind over matter, psychokinetic work, to affect and to mentally affect foreign computer systems. And at the time, Congress was still smarting from the 1960s when they got caught doing mind control projects. And so they came in and they said, not no, but blank no, you will not do active mental work. So that sort of left me standing there in Washington, D.C. with no job. So they had the remote viewing unit had already been going for about 10 years. So they put me into that and said, well, you're going to become a remote viewer. I went in and they read me onto the project. That is, they make you sign your life away because they're going to tell you secrets, and then they tell you the secrets, and then they make you sign your life away again, you know. And when they told me about the remote viewing program, I thought it was on candid camera, that it was some kind of a joke. But sure enough, they were doing a form of science which emulated psychic spying. And not only that, but they were doing a really good job of it. And so I was extremely interested, so I went on into the project and loved it. It was the most interesting job I'd ever had in my life.
Well, I guess Lynn Buchanan is our guest, is the author of The Secrets of Remote Viewing, as told by a psychic spy for the U.S. military. And if you want to go look at that book, it's available on Amazon.com, and there's a link from tonight's program listing. If you've just joined us, welcome. Lynn, you say they were doing it really well. What sort of accuracy rate would you consider to be good?
At the time, a few years later, we were in a lull period when there was no chaos going on in the world, and so we did a two-month study. And at the time, the remote viewers had an accuracy rating of 72.8%.
Wow.
Now,
so a civilian,
not by any means.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of the highest.
Yeah, red card, black card, red card, black card. The odds are 50-50, right? Getting it right.
Well, yes.
So, you know, what would a civilian do? Okay, guess what color the next card is. What sort of accuracy would they have?
Would they on that would have around 50%. However, let's say that instead of red card, black card, you were saying spades, diamonds, and so on. They would have 25%.
Right.
And if you have a, let's say, a flag, and you want to tell what three colors are on the flag, now you're talking, you know, a chance rating of somewhere in one chance in a thousand getting all three colors correct. And so on the really complex targets, such as describe the physical layout of a missile battery and show where it is on a map, you kind of left 50%. Behind a long time ago.
I would say that's the kind of work that remote viewers do. Is
it really is? Yeah.
Is sit down and what? Close your eyes.
Oh no, it's a science. We do it wide awake. No trance states. No altered states. It's a scientific process. It's as though you went through chemistry class and then were asked to mix up a batch of some chemical.
You said you would remote view things like missile silos, missile bases in various places around the world. Was there a lot of that kind of work?
Yes, quite a bit. And we also did things like the plans and intentions of political and military leaders for the following day of battle, or, you know, how different individuals within different governments were going to vote or react to different situations and so on. So we did personality assessments, future work, as well as just the nitty-gritty of drawing the floor plans of the building where the hostage is being held and things like that.
Yeah, that was a famous case. He was a general, wasn't he?
General Dozier, right.
In Italy, who was kidnapped by the Red Brigades.
That's right.
And one of the remote viewers tracked him down, and lo and behold, he was where they said he would be.
That's right.
And was rescued.
Yes, yeah.
You can move back and forth in real time. Can you go back and forth into the past and into the future in controlled remote viewing?
Yes. The the set of rules that govern remote viewing work for time exactly as well as space. So the mechanics of moving back 5 years is no different at all from the mechanics of moving back 5 feet and forward in time as well.
So you could go way back in history.
Oh, yes, we have, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, was that for fun, or was that for the unit, for the agency, and for the Army?
It was mainly, well, it was everything that we did was for the Army.
Uh-huh.
We weren't allowed to have fun with it, you know, personal use and all. However, much of that was for training purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Also, some research. Someone would ask, you know, what happened on such and such a time back in some historical moment, we'd find out, and then that would guide their research. And most of the time, they found out that we had been accurate.
Ah, so they didn't know the answer beforehand. They would pose the question, set you the target. You would go off and remote view that, and then bring the information back, or impart the information that you gathered, and then that information would be taken and corroborated with historians?
Well, corroborated, and also it would guide their research. You know, many times they would look at it and they'd say, "Oh, I never thought of that. Well, maybe we should look here," and they would uncover documentation which had been there all along, but in a place that they would never have thought to look.
Hmm. So physically, you could go into an office halfway around the world in present time, or go back 50 years. You could go to a filing cabinet or a drawer, open that drawer, and pull out a folder.
Sure.
Really?
there was a thing that my company did. This was after the military and all. Someone had entered an office around 31 years ago, and with an invention, and they had just laughed the man out of the place, and he had just thrown the paperwork down and all, but he carried the front page with him, and so they didn't know his name. Well, going through their files, they had found out that this was a multi-million dollar invention today.
Sure.
And they knew that if they developed it now, he could walk back in and say, "This was my invention," and they would lose it. But they had no idea who he was.
What was it you said? He dropped the first page?
He got mad and threw the plans down and stormed out.
Uh-huh.
But he kept the cover letter, and so they had no idea who he was. They found out that it was a great invention some 30 years later.
Ah.
And so the bottom line is that with no more information than that, we found the man. Last I heard, they went and paid him a couple hundred thousand dollars for his invention, and now they're making a couple hundred million off of it, you know. So.
Oh, my. Now you're out of the service. You run an organization called PSI.
That's right. Problems, solutions, innovations.
And you do remote viewing for clients. Yes.
Yes, we do, and we also teach it to police departments and to other individuals. We also have started setting up organizations within a corporation so that they can have their own clandestine remote viewing units if they want.
And what sort of, what would they use that for? An industrial espionage to spy on the competition?
I would certainly hope not, but
chances are.
My hands.
Yeah. Well, it's that kind of world that we live in nowadays. There's very little privacy anymore anywhere.
Right. There are no more secrets. As a company ourselves, we do not do industrial espionage. We draw the line on that.
Mm-hmm. When you and I last talked, in the very last moments of the program, we got an email asking two questions. And I want to ask you those questions tonight again for the sake of our listening audience. Let me go back a couple of years to that email. And the first question was, while you were working with that espionage unit, did you at any time remote view the far side of the moon?
As I remember, you didn't say while with that unit.
No, I didn't, and I just put that in, and I apologize for that. So have you controlled remote viewed the other side of the moon, the far side?
Yes, we have. Uh-huh. Now, while with that unit, we did many practice targets and many experimental targets, which were not officially tasked to us simply because we were developing the technology.
Mm-hmm.
So while with the unit does not mean that we did them for the unit.
Right.
And so, you know, when you're talking intelligence material, you have to be very specific about the wording.
Yeah, yeah. And I realize that there is still that sign your life away that you did a couple of times during the course of your work there.
That's right.
So can you answer what it was that you saw on the far side of the moon?
Basically, what we saw was what I think you would probably expect to see. We saw like storage places and you know, just sort of supply dumps. I know that I've read in some of the common literature about ET bases and all of this. You know, the moon's a nice place, I'm sure, but it's, you wouldn't want to live there.
No.
And especially when you've got a big planet nearby that you can live on. And so the bases that we found were basically on the Earth, but places on the moon, they have storage, you know, facilities, supply places and things like that.
Now, when you say they, who or what are we talking here?
What we seem to have found is that it's not just us and them, it's us and them and them and them and
mm-hmm.
them. There are many thems, each with their own agenda, each with their own purposes and desires, reasons for being here, and so on.
Mm.
And so to say, you know, who are the ETs, is
who are they
in trouble for this one? It's sort of like saying
who are they not?
Well, it's sort of like saying describe women,
yeah.
You know, and give one detailed, definite explanation that applies to all women.
Well, we've heard many descriptions in the past of ETs.
Yeah, I think I'm in trouble with my wife.
Well, if the phone suddenly goes dead, it's either your wife or them.
That's right.
Yeah. So you saw, did you yourself see these things, or was it other members of the team?
Well, different members of the team have done these targets, but yeah, I had done them too, and I had done, I have done many since then, you know, since the military,
uh-huh.
when I could work it on my own and for customers as well, yeah.
Really? Customers who are interested on what's happening on the far side of the moon?
Oh, extremely interested. You know, you see photographs from like the Mars probe or something like that. And we think, oh, okay, here's a detailed landscape, and the astronomers can tell the history of the planet. But you take that same thing and show it to the researchers at a chemical company, and they're going to look at it and bring out their expert geologist. And, you know, you look at it from the point of view of the military, and they look at that as a future situation, a future possibility, and if we're going to have a base there, then where do we strategically put our base to where it's the most serviceable, to where it's the most protected, to where it controls the most property and everything else? And the common man looks at these pictures of other planets and sees another planet. Other people are more...
Big business looks at them and sees big dollars.
Oh, you betcha. Yes, sir.
Both out and in. Yes. I want to get to the second question that that was posed a couple of years ago to you, Lynn, as we were running out of time on the program. And the second question sort of ties into part of your answer to the first question, which was, have you remote viewed the far side or the other side of the moon? And you responded yes, and you had seen bases there belonging to them and many different varieties of them. So the second question was, have you remote viewed UFOs?
Yes, and we actually had some as practice targets. Original remote viewer Pat Price had found some underground bases on Earth and also some undersea bases, and there was the capability of some feedback using military intelligence, but also these sessions then were used as just targeting for practice so that we could get practice. Now, in controlled remote viewing, you never tell the viewer what the target is.
Mm-hmm.
You just give them some code numbers and say, you know, this is Project 930404, question 5, what's the answer? And that's all you tell them. And so over the years, these same basically ET locations, if you will, were used as practice targets, and we sort of tracked activity and species types and things like that at these different bases.
Now, I know that you were databasing the results of the remote viewing within the unit, right?
That's right. I was the database manager as well.
So you would, but did remote viewers share their findings with each other, or they were written down and then handed in, and that was the last the viewers heard of the results?
Actually, they gave feedback to the viewers when they could. The viewers were never allowed to share anything they found because another viewer may be working the same target later, and you didn't want them polluted. And
right.
So, as a unit, we were a unit full of strangers. I mean, we never got to discuss work or anything else.
Mm-hmm. But
we did database, and they gave feedback to the individual viewers.
Right. But as the keeper of the database, you saw the results of all the viewing, presumably.
That taught me the hard way to work through pollution. That would just you know, cripple anyone, any remote viewer. I had to learn the hard way how to work through all of this pollution, and as a result, I databased my work and kept track of my accuracy rating, and my own personal accuracy rating was around 68%, mainly because of the pollution.
Hmm. It could have been higher if there wasn't pollution.
Oh, it could have been much higher, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So to go back to the UFOs, remote view UFOs.
As practice.
As practice.
Right.
And I guess you could describe yourself as being a UFO or an ET believer or a knower.
A knower. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And you know, we had probably some feedback that could not be gained by other people. I mean, you know, we have satellite camera. We have cameras and satellites that can, from 250 miles up, can read your license plate.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really think that we would send a multi-billion-dollar project to Mars and have a camera on it that can't even take a clear picture of a mountain that looks like a face? I mean,
well, yeah. Yeah. Well, and of course, yeah. And that seems to be the feeling among a lot of amateur researchers out there. You know, that there is stuff just not being talked about or being deliberately ignored going on around us, and that's what this program, Strange Days Indeed, focuses on. Lynn.
Well, you know, much of that is for good reason.
Well, understood. I mean, you know, that there are many of us who want to know the answers, but many of us may not like the answers that we get if we get them.
Yeah, and the question is, you know, what would you do if you had the answers? For the average person, they would feel satisfied that they had the answers.
Mm-hmm.
The answers, in fact, can guide national security, international relationships, money, politics, a thousand different major facets in human life. And so, you know, I hate to say this, but I, you know, this will make me unpopular, but I kind of agree with not sharing the information. You know, if now I do agree with sharing it where it can be used.
Yes.
And they're not doing that. And so I disagree with that part of it. But just simply to tell all the secrets, I don't think that would be very useful.
Well, it you know, it might make it a much more us and them than us versus us here.
Well, yeah. That would sort of help, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it? But then, you know, that would cause a lot of large, rich people to lose the earning potential and more richness. I want to thank you for being with us tonight, Lynn Buchanan.
Well, thank you for inviting me back.
You know, it's fascinating, and it's stuff that we could discuss for hours and hours and hours.
Oh, yeah.
And is another aspect of what this program looks like. Thank you, sir. I hope your website is up and running again soon. We are linked off tonight's program listing to your website.
Oh, good.
And the book is The Seventh Sense, The Secrets of Remote Viewing, as told by a psychic spy for the U.S. military. Lynn Buchanan, controlled remote viewer with the United States Army CIA Project Stargate, psychic espionage unit. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.
Good talking with you again.
I really enjoy your show. I like listening to it.
Well, good. I'm glad you're out there listening to it. It's encouraging. It makes it all worthwhile. Good night, Lynn Buchanan.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night. Thanks. Probably only one other person on the planet who recognizes this. And he's the man who made it. That's Alfred Lemberg, the multi-talented Alfred Lemberg.
The quasi-talented.
Well, yeah, all right. The quasi-talented Alfred Lemberg.
The somewhat talented on a good day.
The somewhat talented on a good day, Alfred Lemberg. Good day, Alfred Lemberg.
Hey, wie geht es Ihnen, mein Herr, und uns Damen?
Ah, well, I think most of them are going pretty good.
Well, it just doesn't get any better than that, Errol.
It doesn't, does it?
No.
No. And and your take on Lynn Buchanan?
Let's leap right into that.
Let's go right to that. It's fresh in everybody's
all
mind.
Right. Yeah, I got some thoughts on Lynn Buchanan.
Mm-hmm.
This whole remote viewing thing
mm-hmm.
has a degree of legitimacy that one president of the United States testified to in my presence.
Really?
Yes.
Where were you when, and who was that?
Well, it was on television. He was on a panel, and what he was talking about was we needed to find out where this airplane had crashed somewhere in the Brazilian jungle. I'm not even sure it was the Brazilian jungle.
Mm-hmm.
But we needed to know where this place was, and this outfit, this remote viewing outfit, was able to put together exact coordinates for it. And when we went there to look, there it was.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Well, it's like General Dozier in Italy, kidnapped by the Red Brigades, and the remote viewers pinpointed exactly where he was being held.
Exactly.
And he was rescued.
A degree of legitimacy. And you notice how much floss and dross and wild claims and craziness and national inquirer foolishness goes on. When it comes up, when it has that degree of legitimacy at its core,
mm-hmm.
that you know, just will not go away.
Well, isn't that much like UFOs?
I should think.
Yes.
Exactly. You know, and I was interested, extremely interested, when he was talking about reviewing what. Oh, you know, and I've got a pet peeve. You know, we don't have to be ashamed of thinking or considering the concept of a dark side of the moon. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to say far side. We don't have to see the side that keeps its side away from
away
us
from
as a result of the rotation and the angle of the dangle and the motion of the ocean. You know, I mean, we don't have to do any of that.
Yeah, but You know, I'm often wrong, so when I get the opportunity to be right, then I would prefer to say the other side of the moon, the far side of the moon, because it ain't dark over there.
No, it's dark to us. It's dark to you. It's dark to me. It's pretty dark, dude.
Yeah, I know, but you're just taking poetic license now.
Well, you know, I'm allowed to do that.
Yes, you are.
It's in the bylaws.
It's another one of your quasi, that's C-W-A-Z-Y, quasi talents.
Wow, I'm going to have to run that back and listen to it again.
Yes. Thank God for MP3 recorders.
Really?
Yes.
You know, some of the other things that he was talking about, though, his involvement with the Stargate operation, you know, talking about a United States military involvement with aspects of the paranormal, which is, you know, I mean, on the face of it, look, you know, I was in the military for 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something. Those guys are not interested in doing anything that does not work.
Does not,
you
know, benefit fact, them. Benefit, well, no, the intelligence, yes.
Well, yeah, but in the military, stuff has to work because, you know, when it doesn't work, it's immediately apparent, you
yes.
know, when heads roll,
yes.
and real heads roll, you know,
yeah.
I think we're seeing
and body bags
now.
Flow, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, that whole thing was just, you know, like knocking me out. Discussions and perceiving some kind of mental control over matter, and that their mental work that they, you know, that they were not allowed to do when he had to shut down his program. And then the astonishing percentage of 72.8% great suffering Zot. It begs the question, doesn't it?
Mm.
Why ain't he rich? You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Got an email here from Bubba.
What's Bubba saying today?
Did you ever notice that the small band of remote viewers, each claiming to be the only real remote viewer, are a lot like the early experiences in that they claim to dispense truth? Instead of Adamski claiming to know about alien civilizations and humans' relationship with them, as well as humans' ultimate purpose here on Earth, here we have a remote viewer, even more godlike, claiming to know truth. Truth in the past, truth in the future. There are no walls or barriers we can't penetrate, blah, blah, blah. What a crock! Today's remote viewers are nothing more than the alien experiences of the 50s and 60s. Total crap.
Well, he may be right.
And it's quite possible that in this case he's being just a little narrow-minded.
Now, there's that potentiality, too.
Yes.
But, so, you know, the whole thing about revolt viewing being just kind of another indicator of just how faceted and fractalized the fabric of true reality is, you know, I think that's significant, and I think the fact that there is that small amount of evidence, you know, that, well, you know, let's call it a percentage of 20%, like UFOs, you know, roughly, you know, about 20% unknowns.
Mm-hmm. 27, you know? Actually.
27, did you say?
Yeah, so Stan Friedman claims from the Project Blue Book files.
Wow, 27, that's the highest I'd ever heard.
Yeah.
And I thought I was quoting that Special Report 14, but, well, you know, I mean, you know, I'm not an expert,
yeah, Stan,
by any means.
I've had Stan correct me twice on the radio about that.
27?
So. Yeah.
Wow, smoking.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, remember what Michio Kaku said about UFOs at the end of the Peter Jennings special?
Yeah, kind of gave us that little hopeful hook at the end.
If even one of these reports is real or true, then it's a subject that's worth investigating.
Right. One crop circle.
Mm-hmm.
One stinking crop circle, and we ought to be looking at it. I mean, like, that should be our biggest, you know, like, in this time of war and, you know, like, increasing death and, an increasing class of poor people and a shrinking middle class, and, you know, like, we're supposed to have a whole lot other things, you know, that we're supposed to be worrying about here in this early 21st century, but damn it, I'm telling you, UFOs are happening, they're out there, and I think consideration of them would go a long way towards, cleaning up some of the problems we're having in our own right.
Hmm. So there, dear listener. Alfred Lemberg down there in Alabama. Dueling foghorn. You don't have it handy, do you?
Oh, it's right here.
It's right there? There, that's my fix for the 14 days. We'll come back and get into some more with Alfred Lemberg. Nice out to the break. Oh, I came from Alabama with deliverance on my knee.
Strange days indeed. UFO News Talk Radio on 1010 CFRB Toronto and Montreal CJAD 800. We'll continue with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp. Days indeed on Montreal's News Talk Leader CJAD 800 and News Talk 1010 CFRB in Toronto. To talk to Errol Bruce Knapp, call 1-866-866-7387.
The email address is sdi@virtuallystrange.net. You know, Alfred Lemberg, I didn't realize that the responses to those two questions, the leftover questions from a couple of years ago with Lynn Buchanan, would open up such a large area for discussion. And, boy, that time just blew by.
The show always does.
It does. It does.
You know,
as we pause to think about it.
Yeah, you know, cleaning up on Lynn Buchanan
mm-hmm.
quickly here, because
sure.
One more thing I wanted to say about him. You know, these other things that he was talking about, you know, with regard to the dark side of the moon,
mm-hmm.
Supply dumps,
mm-hmm.
multiple alien races,
mm-hmm.
practice target
mm-hmm.
UFOs,
mm-hmm.
that we attract the activity of these aliens, you know, some pretty startling concepts there that he was sliding under our door. You know,
yes, yes. Well, that's you know, no time to get into it. Have to have him back and make a list of questions and go at them right off the top, rather than, you know, going through once again what controlled remote viewing is.
Yeah.
Mm.
One concept of that he went into and he allowed is that it probably wouldn't be a good idea to go ahead and just tell all the secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I say thee nay. I say thee nay. Consider every... Forget that, you know, like our leadership has kind of, like, betrayed the trust so much that it's up in the air and the jury's way out on what kind of secrets they ought to be allowed to keep anymore, you know what I'm saying? But the consideration that... Actually, you want to know the truth? I lost my train of thought there. I went right out to the bubble and just kind of exploded. I knew I couldn't get into.
I heard you slide off the edge.
Oh, you know what? I just love doing that in front of so many people.
Oh, yeah,
you know, both of you.
Yes.
Of you out there.
Yep, brain fart on the radio live is just not good.
Well, let's slide right in on to the other thing that I wanted to talk about then.
Mm.
And with respect, Bob Pratt.
Yes.
I ran into his website many years ago and even had a little spot for him in the virtual reality UFO updates 3D dimensional park, you know.
Mm-hmm. I remember that, yes.
Yeah, and there was a little spot for Bob Pratt in there. And, you know, you could touch this poster on the wall, you know, of one of the enclosures and go to his website. And that guy was just a complete and absolute delight from the absolute beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then I consider, you know, his efficaciousness, the positive things that he did for ufology and for, I mean, I think, you know, philosophy and humankind in general. and then to have the treatment that he's getting by the mainstream now with regard to that quick identification as a National Enquirer article writer and all of the dumbness and stupidity that that implies, when nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's just irritating.
Well, I don't know, who has picked up on that too much.
Well, that's kind of the mainstream. You know, I mean,
that was the Palm Beach newspaper. But, at the same time, it was part of his past. And, a man of many, many talents and many points of view at one point, what time or another. But as again, to quote Stan Friedman, there were a lot of good, interesting articles published by the National Enquirer that were real stories rather than the made-up stuff.
You'll get no argument for me, but
mm-hmm.
but I'm just trying to give an indication where somebody like Bob Pratt, who was complete and absolute epication his entire ufological career, can get the treatment that he gets by the mainstream, when on the other hand, somebody like Philip Klass, who did absolutely nothing but what was negative and corrosive to the rising and advancing of the human spirit,
mm-hmm.
and he gets eulogies written to him. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but only from the people who really didn't know what he was really like.
Yes, but the mainstream, that's my point. You know,
yeah.
it's coming back to that mainstream, and you wonder how much consideration and respect you should be compelled to give it when it may be the lapdog that it appears to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly in other directions it has become a lapdog, and apparently so,
yeah.
In the last 6 years.
Yes, especially the last 6 years.
Are
you still keeping your U.S. flag upside down? I remember when Reagan got elected, you snapped it over. Did you snap it back?
That was on the all-night television show here in Toronto, and we played Jimi Hendrix's Star Spangled Banner that night, too, as the show opener.
Right on.
Which leads me to say that the 25th anniversary special will air at the beginning of January, the 25th anniversary of the All-Night Show,
mm-hmm.
with Chuck the security guard and his sidekick Ryerson DuPont, the cameraman, and Leonard, also a cameraman, and many of the people who were on the program 25 years ago, with clips from them days. Thank you for that, Alfred.
I hear the music.
Yes, and thank you for leading me into the All-Night Show thing. Yeah. Yeah, that's those were the days, I tell you. It only seems like about, a couple of years ago. Alfred Lemberg, thank you, sir.
And thank you, sir.
As always, it was good. Even Bubba liked it tonight.
Auf Wiedersehen, mein Herr.
Good night, Alfred Lemberg, and thank you, sir. And good night, Jim Pacheco. Thank you. Dean Gualandi here. And of course, to Victor Vigiani and Dave Furlot and Lynn Buchanan. You never know what's going to pop up on this program. Look forward to finding out what's going to be on next Saturday night. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli.